Thanks for listening to another message from Life Christian Church. We hope it challenges and encourages you and helps you to grow in your faith. Don't forget, download our app to stay up to date with what's going on at Life, share your prayer requests or pray for others, read the Bible online and much, much more. Simply search for Life Christian Church in your app store.
Yesterday, it was amazing. Pastor Peter preached a couple of remarkable sessions, actually absolutely brilliant. I was blown away because he preached one of these messages from a passage that, in fact, he preached the same passage that I'm going to preach this morning. And it was like, and we had not talked. We had not, other than the theme, we did not. Oh, I was shattered. It was like when two girls turn up to the same event wearing the same dress. It was like, no, in fact, it was a remarkable confirmation to me. And So I know, and in a sense, I want to build on what we've talked about over the weekend. If you have not been at the conference, you don't know what you've missed out on. But John 3:16 tells us that in sending Jesus to this planet and everything that he did for us, God was motivated by love, For God so liked the world. God so loved the world that he did everything that he did. And I think that when we live our life to the highest intention, we will be motivated to live life out of that same quality, the quality of love. After all, God is love. We sometimes see advertisements. Saw one just the other day for, I think it was some Italian dish, some pasta or whatever. It was beautiful. And but the catch line in the ad was something like, made with love. And this, you know, it maybe is a bit of a throwaway and an advertising gimmick, but the truth is that every good artist understands that there's more to it than just the technicality. When people get up and play an instrument or sing, one of the things about Shane and Sarah, it's not just their gift, but there's something behind it. In fact, let me just encourage you guys. There is something unique on your life. I can't even articulate it. There's something unique on your life. There's that the weight of the presence of God. There is something, there is another season, new season ahead of you, and you carry something of God. And what that's going to look like in the days to come, only God will unfold to you, but something unique. And there is this some truth in the fact of, it's not just, you know, you get to hear somebody get up and sing a song and it may not be technically perfect, but then the next person gets up and it's got feel. It's got soul, it's got something to it. And I think that everything we ought to do in our lives should be built on love. Come out of a motivation of love. So what are you building your life out of? What motivates your life? And let's be upfront. I mean, not everything we do and build, if we're honest, is motivated by love. We have mixed motivations. But the highest intention of your life and my life should be to build a life motivated out of love. And I think the highest aspiration almost of our life should, when we come towards the end of it, to be able to look back and say that love built this. Because God is the center of our life and God is love. Real love changes your life. Think about it. When you first fall in love, when you say, I mean, it changes your life. You see, young guys, suddenly they're having showers, they're cleaning up, they're wearing clean shirts, they're brushing their teeth, they're using deodorant. Man, it's a massive change in their life. I don't know what girls do, paint their toenails or something, I don't know, but it changes your life. And of course, if you pursue that love and you get married, how many of you know that changes your life significantly? Very, you didn't sound too enthusiastic about that, but anyway. And it's not just warm, exciting emotions. It massively alters every area of your life. Love is powerful. So I think it is significant that when Jesus had his last conversation with Peter before he left, and not before he died, but before, after he had died and after he'd risen again, and before he left to go back to heaven, I think it's significant that his last conversation with Peter that's recorded was about love. The conversations that Jesus had with his disciples before he died were significant. But imagine the power of conversations he had with them after he died and rose again. I think you pay more attention to someone who has died and risen again when they talk to you. I've actually never had the experience other than Jesus himself, but somehow their words would have more power. And in this last conversation that Jesus had with Peter, the words were very significant and carefully chosen because he had chosen Peter to be the point man to lead what was to be this new movement, this revolutionary movement that was going to impact the planet and change the world, this thing called the church. And these words would echo inside Peter's mind, and I'm sure Jesus wanted them to echo inside Peter's soul for the rest of his life. And these words would help shape the future of the church for generations and generations to come. And so we should pay attention not only to the words that we'll read in a moment, but also to the context in which they were given. I want you to come with me for a few minutes this morning into the story in John chapter 21. And I want to read a few verses here, but this conversation is so significant. It's as if Jesus is saying, I want you to understand that love, real love, will change your life. So pay attention to where your love goes. Pay attention to where you direct your love. So John chapter 21 verse 1 says, and afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. It happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, called Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, that's James and John, and two other disciples were together. I'm going out to fish, Simon Peter told them. And they said, we'll go with you. So they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore. The disciples did not realize it was Jesus, and he called out to them, friends, have you caught any fish? No, they answered. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. And when they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. And then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, it is the Lord. And as soon as Simon Peter heard him say this, it's the Lord, he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he'd taken it off and jumped into the water. And the other disciples followed in the boat, towing in the net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 yards. And when they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it and some bread. And Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish you have just caught. Simon Peter climbed aboard and dragged the net ashore, and it was full of large fish, 153. But even with so many, the net was not torn. And Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. None of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. And Jesus came and took the bread, gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was the third time now that Jesus had appeared to his disciples after he had raised from the dead. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these? Yes, Lord. He said, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. And again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. The third time, take care of my sheep, Jesus said. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was hurt, because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? And he said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus said, feed my sheep. Now, the context of this conversation is so unique that the words carry so much power. And the central narrative to this story, this entire story, is the conversation that Jesus has with Peter about love. If you were Jesus, if you were about to step outside of human history, out of human history, and hand over this fledgling movement to the point guy, Peter, and this team, and you're going to impart and pour out your spirit to this man, and in fact, the entire future of what you had come to do, and to raise up this movement, the entire future, in fact, of humanity, really, in many respects, was going to depend on this man and this team of men around him. What kind of conversation would you have with them? What kind of conversation would you have with Peter? Would you be talking to them about strategy? Would you be talking to them about the plans? Would you be talking to them about systems? Would you be talking to them about team development? Would you be talking to them about leadership or about so many things we could think of that you'd want to talk to these guys about? But it's not an accident that Jesus does not talk to them about any of these things that we would think, and they're all important, but he doesn't talk to them about any of these things. But he has one singular focus. The conversation is about love. Peter, who do you love? What do you love? Where has your love been directed? We've got to understand the conversation is in a context. At the beginning of the verses we just read, it says Jesus appeared after this event had happened. They'd been out fishing all night. Peter, some of the guys were at the Sea of Galilee, and Pastor Peter preached such a brilliant message this afternoon about this aspect, and it seems they were doing nothing until Peter says, I'm going fishing. And the rest of them said, well, we'll go with you. As we read, they went and fished all night. They caught nothing and came back in the morning, and Jesus is standing on the shore, and Jesus asks the question that no fisherman wants to be asked when you catch nothing. And not just quietly. They're out 100 meters out, and he calls out, morning, boys! Did you catch anything? Yeah. You never tell stories about when you went fishing and caught nothing. You only tell the stories when you caught something, and no matter what you caught, the story is always bigger. And what you don't want is when you've had a whole night and you've only got empty nets, there's someone standing on the shore yelling, how did it go? That's irritating enough. But what a fisherman really hates is when someone thinks they can fish better than them. And you have a carpenter telling professional fishermen what to do. When I was just a young pastor, and I've always loved boating and fishing, when I was just a young pastor, probably in my 20s, and there was a lady in our church. She was then, you know, probably in her 60s. Her husband was not a Christian, but we became friends, and he had a really nice boat, and so over time he would invite me out. We went out fishing. And I remember on this one occasion, one of the earlier occasions, I was out with Lindsay, and he's a good fisherman. And we're out there fishing just in Moreton Bay, just off the north of Stradbroke, North Stradbroke Island, and I just start catching fish. It's like I have got, I remember it so clearly, I've already got 11 and Lindsay's got none. And like, I remember, because I'm fishing out this side of the boat, and I remember at one point him casting over near where I was casting. We're using the same bait. I just keep pulling fish in. He got not a thing. I actually felt so bad. And Jesus calls out, throw your net on the other side of the boat. You'll catch some. Just stop and think for a minute how Peter and James and John will feel. You've been out fishing all night. You've caught nothing. Do you think they've only just had the net out on one side of the boat? I think this was not necessarily a new idea to them. It wasn't something they hadn't done before. He wasn't telling them to do something unique or something new. Just the difference is now they're going to do it with Jesus. So I want, again, just to keep bringing us back to this thought, and you'll understand why in a minute. If you're going to build a life out of love, the first thing you have to ask is, how has love changed your life? The creator of the universe, of the cosmos, how has that changed you? How is it possible that you've encountered the very creator of the cosmos and your life could still be exactly the same? How has love changed you? It's not bad enough that Peter's feeling, I don't know what to do with my life. So I'm going back to do what I did before I met Jesus. I'm going fishing. But all the other disciples were worse off than Peter. They didn't know what to do either. So when Peter says, I'm going fishing, they say, well, we'll come too. The only thing worse than someone who doesn't know what to do with their life is doing nothing with their life are the people following the people who are doing nothing with their life. The only difference between Peter and his friends is that he was just going nowhere a little faster than they were. Be careful who you follow. Some people invest their lives following people who are going nowhere, and guess where you'll end up if you follow someone who's going nowhere? You'll end up nowhere. The curious thing about love is that you become like what you love. I remember a few years ago I was going for a run. I sometimes go up to, there's an area not far from home called Paradise Point on the Gold Coast, and it's on the waterfront. But I remember, and over a space of a few weeks, I saw a number of incidents of this. I'd never quite noticed it before, but I remember this one day really impacted. There's this lady dressed up, she had blonde hair, kind of done up. She's walking on the path beside the beach, high heels, like she is dolled up to the max, and she's got a dog. Could you guess what sort of dog? It's a poodle. And I remember thinking, wow, they look so alike. Because the poodle had a little thing in its hair and it was like, and they were walking the same. Yeah. Peter liked that. Listen, one way that you know you love God is because when you love God, you become like him. When you love Jesus, you become like him. And if you want to know what you love, just look at what you like, what you look like. Here's the curious thing. The problem wasn't so much that Peter and the disciples chose some dark, nefarious activity or life. Peter wasn't so angry and disappointed and disillusioned with Jesus and all that had happened that he became an axe murderer, or he, you know, went to organized crime, or started becoming a thief. No, nothing bad. He didn't become a criminal or do something bad. He just went back to being a fisherman. So the tragedy of Peter's decision wasn't that he decided to become something terrible. He just decided to go back to his ordinary existence, doing the same thing he had done before he met Jesus. So my question to you is, how has love changed you? How has God's love changed you? And it's interesting, it's beautiful, and Peter talked about this yesterday. Jesus met them in their fishing, even though they've gone back, and it's, I don't think it's incidental that they caught nothing. I think God orchestrated that, so they would realize that if they chose to go back, there was nothing there to go back to. And I think when Jesus said, throw out your nets, and their nets were filled, Jesus was saying, there's nothing wrong with what you're doing in this life, but trying to live this life without me is going to leave you empty. So they threw out the nets, and the nets were filled. And again, this is how you know these guys were fishermen, because John records that the nets were full. They were large fish, and there was 153 of them. That's how you know they were fishermen, because when you're a fisherman, they were large fish, and you've counted them. You know how many you got. Some people wouldn't care. Verse 15, when they'd finished breakfast, and again, so much in that thing, and Pastor Peter spoke about it yesterday, but when they'd finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these?" And there's interesting interpretations about, you know, more than these, more than these fish. Simon, do you love me more than fish? Oh, God. Fish, God. Yeah, okay, God. I don't think that in itself is necessarily a hard question. It's like, do you love me more than pizza? More than caffeine? Do you love me? I don't think that in itself is necessarily a hard question. Yes, Jesus, I love you more than fish. I love you more than coffee. I think maybe Jesus is asking, do you love the life I'm calling you to more than the life I'm calling you from? Do you love the life I'm calling you to more than the life that I'm calling you from? Peter has chosen to go back to the life that he was comfortable with, that he had control over. It's interesting. The other little thing that's very interesting in this conversation is that Jesus calls Peter Simon, son of John. Three times, and each of the times he asks the question, do you love me? He prefaces it with the address, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And that's interesting because Jesus was the one who had changed his name to Peter. In fact, in the account that John writes, he calls him Peter. By now he's known as Peter. But Jesus now is calling him Simon, son of John, three times. He changed his name to Peter because at that point he was calling out in Simon, as he was, God's intention. Peter now has this almost identity crisis. And I think Jesus is referring to him as what he had gone back to, as to what he had chosen to go back to. And are you going to be who you were or who I called you to be? Jesus says, do you love me? And he says, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. And again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Feed my sheep. The third time, he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him this third time, do you love me? And he said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Feed my sheep. There's a lot of threes here. It's interesting. There's a lot of threes, a lot of triads here. Three times Jesus asks him, do you love me? Three times Peter says, I love you. Three times Jesus says, feed my sheep. It's interesting also, three times Peter denied Jesus before he was crucified. There's a lot of threes. It feels almost like in these questions, Jesus is like doing a soul cleanser. It's like, three times you denied me. But I'm going to pull this confession out of you that you love me. I'm going to pull this out of you three times, and I'm going to replace the three times you said, I don't know him, with, I love you. So that you never remember the denials, but you remember the declaration. It's like having a palate cleanser. Sometimes you still get the taste of something previous. It's like Jesus was doing something in Peter's heart and his soul. And there's also one other very interesting three in this passage. John tells us earlier, this was now the third time that Jesus had appeared to the disciples after he'd been raised from the dead. It's not the first time. It's not the second time. It's in fact the third time. How many times does God have to show up before you stop going back to the life that he called you from? You think it would take just one appearance after he was risen? I mean, they saw him crucified. They saw him killed. They saw the life sucked out of him. They saw him dead. And then the first Sunday, he shows up alive. That's why we meet on Sundays. It was a Sunday. And of course, you know the story. He showed up the next Sunday because Thomas had missed the first one. It's what happens when you miss church. You just never know what you've missed. How many times does Jesus have to show up before Peter begins to live the life that Jesus calls him to? How many times does God have to show up before you live the life that he's calling you to? Love changes you. But love also changes the world around you. And this is the next higher. We're going to finish in a few minutes. We thought, and for those of you who were here last night, we talked about Elijah's journey and intimacy with God. But there's another higher. There's more than just you and God. When we ask the question, God, and it's an important question to ask, how has love changed me? How has my encounter with the creator of the universe changed me? You see, the conversation with Jesus had a rhythm. Do you love me? Yes, I love you. Feed my sheep. Three times. Imagine if there'd only been two parts and not the third. It would have been the most self-indulgent, awkward conversation to be listening to. Peter, do you love me? Yes, I love you. Do you really, really love me? I really, really love you. But do you really, really, really love me? You know, I really, really, really love you. Oh, it would have been really awkward. You know, I think sometimes that's the conversation we want with God. That's important, but there's the third part. But sometimes, and some people just want a narcissistic, self-indulgent conversation with God. That's just about us and God, me and God. God, do you love me? Yes, I love you. I love you. And we're just going to, just me and Jesus, we're just going to skip through life. And we're just going to have a wonderful time. And we don't need people. It's just Jesus and me. We don't need the church. It's just me and Jesus. I've heard people talk that language. I want to tell you, if there's anybody here and that's in your heart, you haven't met God, because he's not self-indulgent. God is not needy like us. He wants our love, but he doesn't need it. God doesn't have a Facebook account. He's not up every morning going, I wonder how many likes I've got today. He's saying, love me, because you need his love. We need to see and understand what God does. The moment he becomes the focus of our love, he immediately dispenses that love to others. Do you love me? Yes, I love you. Feed my sheep. Do you love me? Yes, I love you. Feed my sheep. Do you love me? Yes, I love you. The moment he gets our love, it's dispensed to others. That's the heart of God. That's the next step higher. Do you love me? Yes, I do. Prove it. Feed my sheep. Let me just say, because this is important, I've heard this statement, feed my sheep, that Jesus made. I've heard that statement distorted, I think, at times over the years. I hear Christians, as a pastor for many years, I've had people come into my church, and I get this, and it's not to decry when people have come out of a situation where they haven't been fed, but I've had people come into my church and say, oh, I just want to be fed. And we do get fed, and we need to get fed, but if that's the only reason you're here, you're like a spiritual bulimic. You come and eat all you can and throw it up and starve yourself all week long till you come back for the next feed. And the problem here is that when Jesus said to Peter, feed my sheep, listen to this, there were no sheep at that point. Some Christians interpret that as being, we should spend our lives having Bible studies to teach Christians the Bible. Now, that's important, and God has given teaching gift to the church. But at this point, there was no Bible. Hard to have a Bible study when it hasn't been written yet. They had the Old Testament. If Jesus was just saying, teach the Bible to Christians, well, Peter should have just grabbed James and John and the other guys and said, sit down. This is what Jesus told us to do. Turn to your Bibles. Open your Bibles to 1 Peter. Oh, I'm still writing it. In fact, I think we'll have two parts. Oh, John, you should write one too. I don't think that's what Jesus was saying. I think you can really only translate this statement of Jesus context of a world that is starving and hungry, starving for love, starving for belonging, starving for hope, starving for love. And I need you to feed them. That's what Jesus is saying. To care about them. I need you to get out of your boat, out of your comfort area, and go into the world and feed people who are starving. So my question as we finish, how has love not just changed you, but how has it changed the world around you? How has it pulled you out of yourself to people who desperately need you to love them and to feed them? You know, the beautiful thing about love is that it talk about renewable energy. It's the ultimate renewable. When you spend it, you just get more back. Like it's not a limited commodity or a limited resource. Like when you have kids, you know, you might have one and you love them with all your heart and then you have another one. You don't sit down and go, okay, so we're going to have to halve our love. Can you imagine Sarah and Shane? Poor kids. In fact, sorry, after seven, we run out of love. No. It's not like a pie that you divide up. When you give more, you get more back. It just is an endless commodity that comes from the heart of God. And when you let love flow out of your heart to people who are hurting and broken and in need of Jesus, let me tell you, more will come from God Himself. That's what He's called us to do. That's the higher. I know we've gone over time, but it's my last meeting. Before we close, one other little interesting dynamic, and I want to challenge you about. Church has a reputation in our culture that unfortunately has been damaged. And people, rightly or wrongly, and sometimes rightly, have seen the church as not trustworthy, seen the church as judgmental, seen the church as condemnatory, self-righteous. And as a result, many people have a negative view of God. It's interesting about different species. So, species, when they come together, they're seen in a different way, and it's reflected interesting. That's true. So something happens, you can have one, but when they come together, there's a perception. What's the world call us when we come together? What's the world call the church? How has love changed your life? The church is supposed to be a movement of people who've been transformed by the love of Jesus. who are desperately committed to making sure that every human knows that they're loved by Him. How has love changed your life? How has love changed the world around you? Do you love me? Feed my sheep. God bless you. Thanks, Pastor Peter.